Section 2, the annual expenses and benefit return forms. Now that we know what forms are required, my next step is to take a look at those forms and compare them with the ones that I submitted last year. I want to see if anything has changed and consider whether I will have to do anything different this time. Well, good news. The only change is the year from 2009-10 last year to 2010-11 this year. So we have no added complications to contend with. I am serious about taking a look at the forms and familiarising yourselves with the information that will be required, because in that way we can start our preparation on an informed basis. If we look at the form P9D, recognising of course that few of us will have to complete one of these forms, we see that Section A1 covers expenses payments, Section A2 requires details of any other payments or benefits, including any other payments or benefits not included on the employer's annual return form, for 2010-11. For most of us, it is probably not too late to manually amend the P35 and P14s if we now realise that a P90 person has, for example, received a monthly round sum allowance for topping up his or her mobile phone, where HMRC would expect PAYE and NIC deductions. Some of my clients will put such top-ups through the PSA system. PAY settlement agreements will be covered in a later podcast. Section C of the P9D covers vouchers and credit cards. So, for example, if a generous employer were providing £60 per week in childcare vouchers to a P9D employee, the excess of £5 per week would have to be reported here. Section D deals with any accommodation benefit provided to a P9D employee. And I will deal with that in greater detail on one of the later podcasts. However, as part of our preparation, we should think about a P9D employee who might be in exempt job-related accommodation, but where some expenses will have to be reported. Form P11D is also unchanged, except for the tax year of 2010-11. And the first point to note, which can be missed if you print a copy of the form with a black and white printer, is the different colour boxes for entering the cash equivalent or value of the expense payments or benefits to be reported. The brown boxes signify a benefit in kind that attracts a Class 1A NIC's liability, which has to be paid to HMRC after the end of the tax year. And as I've already mentioned, by the 19th or 22nd of July 2011 payment deadline. More importantly, the blue boxes cover expenses and other payments made by the employer that could attract a Class 1 NIC's liability. That liability has to be paid much earlier and should be processed through the payroll. I referred earlier to the school fees example, but my advice to you is to look at the various reporting requirements and use the HMRC CWG5 booklet. Appendix 1 of that booklet provides guidance on whether or not there is an NIC's liability, then whether it is Class 1 or Class 1A NICs, and it also tells us where to report the item on Form P11D. Many of you who've heard me speak before will know it's one of my favourite booklets. Section A of the P11D is for reporting assets transferred to employees, so we might begin by checking the fixed asset register. Establish if any assets have been sold to employees, and their market value, particularly company cars, where the market value must be used and not the written down book value of the car. Section B is for payments made on behalf of the employee and rarely requires any entry by us. Section C is headed vouchers and credit cards, where we might report the excess over £55 per week of childcare vouchers to a P11D employee, or other taxable vouchers given to staff, perhaps as a reward for doing something, or for long service, but not within the long service exemption provisions. The alternative for such voucher awards would be to gross up through the payroll or include them in a PAY settlement agreement if the employer wants to settle the liability with HMRC. Section D of the P11D is for reporting the taxable value of living accommodation, perhaps a company house or flat, but not hotel accommodation, which would normally be reported at Section N. Are we aware of any living accommodation being provided, and do we need to establish the value and any other costs involved before we can prepare the P11Ds? Next, we have Section E for reporting mileage allowance and passenger payments, but only to the extent that these exceed the authorised amounts of 40 pence per mile for the first 10,000 business miles, then 25 pence for any additional mileage. Some employers may have decided to pay more than the 40p authorised mileage limit because of the large increases in fuel prices that we have suffered in recent years. The excess over 40p and 25p should be reported here, and any reimbursement in excess of 40p will incur a NIC's liability. Has anyone been monitoring the 10,000 mile limit to reduce the reimbursement to 25p on any excess mileage? Do business mileage records need reviewing before we make a start on the P11Ds? Section F covers company cars and car fuel benefit. So where do we get the information we will need on company cars to be reported? Do we have to ask the leasing company or a garage dealership for details of the list prices of cars and any accessories, the CO2 emissions, etc.? Let's not leave that to the last minute. Here again, we will come back to mileage records and employee expense claims, which might need reviewing to decide if car fuel benefits should be reported. Have employees who are provided with company fuel or credit cards to pay for fuel repaid the full cost of any private fuel? If anyone has to make good the cost of any private mileage, that needs to be done sooner rather than later, and certainly before we are ready to submit the 2010-11 P11Ds. On the CBD Master Courses, I will talk about the impact filing case. Section G is for reporting company vans and van fuel benefit, where their use has been more than business travel, home-to-work mileage, and what HMRC describes as insignificant private travel. Again, we come back to business mileage recording and monitoring of the use of company vans by employees. Who do we ask about this? And do we need to remind employees to submit their mileage records? Section H is where we have to report details of any interest-free loans or loans where the rate of interest charged to employees was below the official rate of interest. That was 4% for the whole of 2010-11. Nothing has to be reported here if the maximum amount outstanding of any and all loans did not exceed £5,000 at any time in the tax year, or if an employer director has paid at least 4% interest on the loans received. Who can tell us whether any loans were made in the year or were still outstanding from an earlier year? Do not be misled by any overdrawn director's loan accounts that might have been repaid before the end of the accounting period. Section I is for reporting private medical treatment or insurance, with the latter rarely posing a problem, although we might have to ask someone outside the company for the cost to be reported. But do we need to check whether any medical costs were incurred, such as consulting fees, and these may need to be reported or included in a PSA? Section J is where we report any qualifying relocation expenses, payments and benefits, which are in excess of the £8,000 tax relief limit. This might involve obtaining information from a number of different sources, perhaps a solicitor, a removal firm, the estate agent, or a specialist relocation company. So let's not leave this to the last minute. Also, we may need information on costs incurred in the previous year 2009-10, as well as for the tax year 2010-11. We must remember that we have to take into account all the costs from the start of the relocation process. The limit of £8,000 is per relocation, not just for the tax year. Section K is rarely of interest and refers to services supplied, perhaps free conveyancing for employees of a firm of solicitors. There will be nothing to report if the employees pay the marginal cost, or there is no marginal cost. Section L is headed assets placed at the employee's disposal, and a company car would be an obvious one, but we have already dealt with that because cars are taxed under specific legislation. the use of laptops, fax machines, and other business assets should be exempt. But is there a company boat, a plane, or a helicopter to consider, or more mundane matters, such as furniture, fixtures, and fittings, in a company house or flat? Perhaps a painting kept at home by the director? Non-uniform clothing can cause problems and may fall under this heading. We perhaps need to ask a few questions. We're almost at the end of the P11D form, being left with what I call the sweep-in-up sections. Firstly, Section M for other items including subscriptions and professional fees. There should be a dispensation to cover job-related subscriptions and professional fees, such as your AAT subscription, if reimbursed by the employer. We can ignore magazine subscriptions like Pay and Benefits magazine, used by payroll and HR staff, but we cannot ignore LA Fitness or David Lloyd subscriptions if paid by the employer. That will be a benefit to be reported. Section M is the only dual-purpose section where we can choose a brown or a blue box, so use Appendix 1 of the CWG5 booklet to decide what goes here and what information you're going to need. Last but not least is Section N, expenses payments made to or on behalf of the employees. And in an ideal world, I would usually like to see this left blank, because every employer should have a PLMD dispensation to cover travel and subsistence payments, business entertaining, and business telephone costs. But being realistic, we might still have some taxable elements, and it is the sweeping up section, so we need to think about analysing expense claims and deciding what has to be reported here. The final form that I have to consider is the P11DB return of Class 1A National Insurance contributions and the employer declaration, which can be left until the P11Ds are finalised. We will then add up all brown box entries to arrive at the total benefits liable to Class 1A NICs. And we may need to make some adjustments in Section 4 for employees coming from abroad or who have gone abroad to work, where no NICs may be due. But that is something for another day and another podcast.